Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. I come to you today after my first ketamine session, which happened a day and a half ago, I guess, as of now. I don't know, time and space are a little weird. Life feels weird. None of this makes sense. So, I did prior, I was like, again, time and space doesn't make sense. I feel very wonky, so I had to make like an outline of what I wanted to talk about in this episode. And as I said in the introduction to this, one of my goals is to hopefully, and I'm very flexible with this based on what my body needs, to record an episode after every session, a little bit like my own digital diary, if you will. But that way, there's an intimacy, and if you especially are interested in doing this, you can see what my lived experience was like from the very first to the end, and speaking about them individually per session rather than just cumulatively at the end. Now, again, I'm being flexible. We'll see what my body needs. I almost didn't think I was going to be able to record this episode because I will tell you, my first session was extremely intense. Not in a bad way. I never felt uncomfortable. I never felt unsafe. But I did read, I did a lot of prep, like I mentioned in the introduction, going into it, really setting, trying to create a container both within myself and also outside of myself to lead in, kind of flow into this really discombobulating experience, which I knew it would be. I've done psychedelics before. With my most recent experience, I did a trip down in Mexico doing 5-MeO, 5-MeO, which is the medicine of the toad, and with a shaman down in Mexico. That was back in March of 2023. It was a very powerful experience, very great. However, that experience, and I want to bring this in too, when I had that experience, I never had these massive breakthroughs. I had this very, the first 2 to 3 minutes of doing 5-MeO, you're unconscious. You have no recollection of what happened. I just remember getting sucked into this very dark void. I didn't have the colorful geometric experience that my friends had that did that journey with me. And I remember waking up really agitated. I created a container for my body to process what it needed to process, but I was very aware in that 5-MeO experience that my body was protecting me by not necessarily showing me, giving me conscious awareness of what I was processing. But that 5-MeO experience back in March of 2023 was very powerful. I think it was a precursor to this, actually. And I became very aware of that during the ketamine session. That was not something I went in thinking, like, oh, yeah, I'm sure my 5-MeO experience is going to just so flawlessly weave into this. So before I get into the nitty-gritty, let's back up just a little bit. Let me set the stage for you all, especially those that are interested in getting into ketamine-assisted therapy. You're curious about it. I think a lot of I'm not gonna lie, I was nervous going into this. I have a lot of coping skills. I have a lot of experience with mental health therapy for decades. I have a lot of tools in my toolbox. The nervousness is more around the uncertainty of what's the experience is gonna be like, and also just nervous about what I'm gonna have to deal with. I mean, I went in kind of frustrated that I even have to do this therapy, but I was also ready for it. So there's a lot of emotions going around. So to give you a little, let me set the stage. I walked in for my first session. So I arrive, I do some quick intake paperwork beyond what I needed to do online prior. So it was things like just signing informed consent. There was like a sheet on billing. So we got all that set up. After that, the nurse comes and gets me, and she's like, "Hey, we need to take your weight, which will determine the dose that you get." And they did my initial BP, and they proceeded to take my BP multiple times during the session just to make sure that I was responding okay. I then, after that, I sat back down in the waiting room, and they said, "Hey, the psychiatrist will come and get you in a second." And she did. She comes and gets me, and we sit down. We just have an overall discussion about what brings you in. She asked some questions on if I had been hospitalized in a psychiatric ward, things like that. So, just answer the yes and no's, give They're not a th this isn't a therapy session. Like, I think that's one of the things that I've learned with psychiatry versus mental health therapy. It's like they're just really wanting to get like the lay of the land. So I was just very much like, yeah, cliff notes, seven surgeries in the past 2 years, family this, diagnosed with CPTSD when I was 27. I'm on five different forms of psych meds right now, two antidepressants, two PTSD, and then my Vyvanse. I shared with her my goals. I also signed a release of information form for her to be able to call my initial psychiatrist who referred me to this ketamine-assisted therapy clinic, so that she could open up dialogue with her, which was really great. I felt very supported. She also just gave me a rundown. She said, listen, like, we see an 80% wonderful outcome. There is a probability, there is that 20% chance you could be in that group and this doesn't help you. She was giving exa she said, ways that you can increase the efficacy are, and just so you all know, is to partner the ketamine-assisted therapy with mental health therapy sessions, making sure you're taking that full 2 weeks. She also was very much like, if you do drink alcohol, don't during this month that you're doing this. It almost cancels out the effects of the ketamine. I don't really drink alcohol that much anyways. I went a year and a half not drinking. Now I maybe drink once, twice a month. I don't know, but I'm also getting to that age where I'm like, it ain't worth it. I love sleeping. So she let me know, and in my introduction episode, I told you all that. Like, I'm not actually doing mental health therapy in conjunction with this. I really do trust I have enough coping skills. I have Barbara on the she's on the back burner right now, like kind of on the sidelines. She said she'd be willing to tap in. I could just email her if needed. I just got done doing yoga this morning, which was actually very, very interesting. I'll get into that here in a second. And a lot of meditation, a lot of mindfulness. I've been sleeping at night. My lineage, I'm a bit of a mutt, as a lot of Americans are, mostly Italian. However, I do have roots in Native American, and so some of that stuff came up as well for me. So I'm actually gonna write that down right now. Sorry, I'm like, again, time and space. I'm really trying to like connect the dots here for y'all to make this as meaningful as possible. But I even think me just coming raw at it is kind of showing you my brain is getting rewired right now. I'm in a very vulnerable mental state, which is not bad. I'm excited about it, but there's a lot of protective factors that go into it. So they tell me about, to increase the efficacy is to like create a container during that 4 weeks. I already kind of shared that with you in the introduction episode. They also said they gave me an anti-nausea prior, which I opted into. You could opt in or out. I decided to opt into it. It was a dissolvable Zofran. They said that ketamine sometimes can cause nausea and vomiting. I was like, yeah, I would like to prevent that. Now, I do know there's some people that are like, oh, vomiting's great. It's a purge. I mean, sure. Okay. But like, my body's been through enough. I'll vomit later. And actually, what's funny is this morning, circling back around to my yoga experience, I have created a yoga schedule, a massage schedule. I have acupuncture tomorrow, those type of Eastern modalities to really support my body through this. It was so interesting. In yoga this morning, I was doing great, last 10 minutes. And I'm not a throw upper. I'm not a vomiter. Okay. I never have been, even when they're like, oh, you should vomit. I'm like, I don't know what it is about my body. That's just not a response. This morning, I was like, oh shit. I had to leave the yoga studio and go to the bathroom. I was like, I am about to projectile vomit. I ended up not, thankfully. I think I just needed some air. I don't know. It was interesting, but it did feel like there was some movement, like my body was trying to get rid of some stuff. So, just know nausea could be a thing. I was really grateful that they said, hey, we want to support you in this. We're not trying to get you to throw up. So if you want some Zofran, so I took it. She also said, hey, how are your nerves? And I said, I'm not gonna lie, I haven't slept the last 2 days. She said, well, just so you know, on your first session, we can give you some anti-anxiety. I said, sign me up. Love some anti-anxiety meds in the sense of like being gentle with my body. So I once had a nurse called this, it's called Versed, is the type of anti-anxiety they often give you prior to going back for surgery. So she brought up Versed and I was like, oh, they call that vein champagne in the medical world. So they thought that was amazing. They thought that was funny. Said, yeah, let's do some Versed. So we got all that. It was really meeting with the psychiatrist. She was writing some stuff down. More just like, let's touch base. Let's have like a 15-20 minute discussion on why you're here. Then the nurse came in to take me into the room, and there was a recliner, there was meditation music going, there was one of those my beloved, like kind of galaxy light thing going. They brought me a blanket. They were just very kind and compassionate. What can we do to get you in a space to be able to be as receptive for this experience? I asked a couple questions. I said, hey, should I expect, like, is this going to make me stay horizontal the whole time? Like, I had a psychedelic experience on 5-MeO where my body, like I actually needed to get up and move. Is that okay for me to do? Like, so any type of those questions I asked, they were like, yeah, usually you'll probably just lay flat. However, there are people that get up. You're more than welcome to do that. I also called ahead of time and said, hey, like I have my, whatever you want to call it, meditation, ritual, whatever. I have my little trinkets on my, call it an altar, if you will, that I wanted to bring with me. And one of them is this wonderful woman, really. She's a pregnant woman that she exemplifies the earth. And so I brought her with me. I brought Lady Guadalupe with me, and then Baphomet as well. I had a couple of. When I was in Quartzsite, Arizona, we had gone digging for some quartz. So I brought those with me and a couple other crystals and just really kind of set up a space, did a grounding activity right before we got started. And so she does the Versed, and then almost immediately after, I mean, the Versed kicks in pretty quickly. Then almost immediately after that, she administered the ketamine, which was 45 milligrams. I will say this, and I didn't ask follow-up questions. The nurse originally came in and said, hey, we'll do 40 milligrams. And then the psychiatrist was like, no, let's do 45. And I do think, so I'm a medical marijuana user for a lot of my chronic pain. It helps me tremendously. I also think it's because Kyle's in the cannabis business and he grows fully organic. And I can tell you right now, there's a difference between organic cannabis and recreational cannabis, or even the cannabis that you get on the med side of things. Not all med cannabis is organic, just so you know. But it's been helping me. I let her know. I was like, yeah, I smoke most times, like, I don't like to, I try to do cannabis to navigate my nausea, things like that. Also, as an appetite suppress, not suppressant. Gosh, this is where, come on, brain cells. Stimulant. There we go. Because I lost so much weight going into my transplant that I'm actually on a journey to try to gain some weight, get in a healthy space. So I think because of that, just so you know, she very much asked about like drug use, cannabis use. Let her know, like, yeah, I'm a pretty daily, if not every other day, cannabis user. So my assumption is it might have gone up. I might have went up that 5 milligrams because of that. I'm actually going to ask this next time around. Something else I don't know as well is like, do I stay at 45 milligrams the entire time, or do I get my next session? I'm recording this on a Sunday. My next session is in 2, 3 days, so on Wednesday. So again, it's 6 sessions in 4 weeks, so that's a lot. Right now I'm almost like, oh shit, like I gotta go back and do this. But they said in the beginning it's like your body, the first couple of sessions can be a little bit wonky, so there's some of that. So they start the ketamine. Something else I want to say here is they let me know, they said, hey, within 15 minutes if you don't feel anything, let us know. And that it was an IV, so it's slow drip. So it's not like they stick you and all of a sudden you're just like in a K-hole. It was very slow moving. It was around the 15 minutes. She said, hey, I'm going to come in around the 15 minutes. So she came in 3 separate times to take my blood pressure throughout this entire process. She said, when I do come in, you do not have to interact with me. My assumption is you'll be on your journey. So when she did come in at the 15 minutes, and I want to, it felt like 20 minutes after that, and then at the hour mark, I can't really tell you. Time and space didn't make sense at that point. I was on a journey, and we'll get into that in a second. So when she came in at the 15, I was definitely on my ride, and I felt her presence there, but she also felt very distant from me, even though she was like right next to me taking my blood pressure. So she came in quietly, left quietly. So I was in my recliner. I never moved. The one thing that they didn't have, and in a way I'm almost kind of glad, I didn't have any headphones on and I didn't have an eye mask. And I'm For the first session, I'm glad I didn't. I think that can make you feel a little claustrophobic. I do know now moving forward that I am going to bring my own eye mask. I am going to bring my own headphones because I personally want that experience. However, that is something I will tell you to think about is like the maybe the first time just go in without it just so you can, because you can open your eyes and really be like, oh, okay, I'm in Denver and I'm in this clinic. And especially if you get a little anxious going through it. But I'm gonna bring mine this next time. And then of course you can like take the eye mask off if you need. I didn't even ask if they have some. I'm sure they do. But just so you know, that was kind of the setting up the session, what it was like, especially in the beginning, leading into it. Once the session was over, the nurse came, took out. I was still very much on the journey. So I felt her taking the needle out of my arm. I had my eyes closed. She was really gentle. She didn't even really say anything. She just kind of took the needle out. It was clear the session was over. I was still riding the waves. She leaves without really saying anything. So I was a little at that time like, ooh, what am I supposed to do? But I was like, stop. This is also a pattern of like, how about we just sit here? They know what they're doing. We don't have to be in control, right? So then the psychiatrist maybe like 5 minutes later comes in. And she sits down, how you doing? Just what was it like for you? And I just remember feeling very gentle, feeling very like exhausted. I let her know, I said I was very aware of the times that I was trying to build a narrative. And I think that was the biggest thing. She was very like giving me a lot of affirmation on, I said, I was just trying to experience it, like not trying to think about it, because it was very like once the ketamine hit, you're on a roller coaster. Like this image pops up and then it's not, you can't really stick with it. And if you try to tether yourself to it, then you're just gonna block what needs to happen. And it was really trying to get my ego out of the way so I could just be on this journey and not try to settle into any one image, very vivid image that popped up. So there were a couple times I had to be like, hey, like, stop. Right. It was almost like something I had to be like, oh, this means I need to forgive, blah, blah, blah. Or this means I need to like lean into the anger here. But I remember being like, no, let's not do that. Like, that's the narrative, that's the pattern we need to stop. We just need to be an objective observer of what's going on. She was very affirmatory of that, if that's even a word. She was like, yes, a lot of times people actually get in their own way with ketamine therapy because they're trying to make sense of it all instead of just letting the therapy be what it is, allowing it the space. We don't have to create a narrative. We don't have to connect the dots. It's just doing what it needs to do. And so that now brings me into what the actual experience was like. It was wild. Prior to going into it, I let the psychiatrist know. She was like, yeah, we don't, it is a really beautiful experience. Sometimes there's people that get really bad experiences. And if that's the case, we just try to say lean into it because that's your trip. So I told her, I was like, based on my other psychedelic experiences, I'm kind of almost anticipating having a bad trip. I'm happy to report that I did not have a bad trip. It was a lot. It felt like I was downloading a million different things at once. There were colors. I wouldn't say it was like this crazy geometric-y type color thing, but there was a lot. At one point, once it hit, and I closed my eyes, and I was very vividly in my mother's womb. I could see light, like fractals. I could feel the amniotic fluid. Which was very interesting. And I was very aware of myself as a fetus. I could think clearly too, almost as if I had the brain I have now while I was in my mother's womb. And I was like, fighting for my life in there, trying to get my mom's attention to say something's wrong, something's wrong. And I like intuitively knew it was because my body wasn't forming correctly in there. Like, oh, that something happened. And it's interesting fiasco that has happened with Nutcracker Syndrome. And I couldn't, I mean, as a fetus, you don't have words, you know? So I was very frustrated. I remember being in the womb, very frustrated, trying to communicate with her that something was wrong. And that, la again, the journey is very, it's not like that was the whole hour. It was like that was the first very vivid memory that I had. And then it was just, again, a roller coaster. It was like all this stuff was coming at me at once, and it's just about letting it kind of flow through you, breathing through it. I never had panic attacks or anything. I felt very like objective about everything. So even when I was in my mother's womb and I was like fighting to say something's wrong, something's not developing properly, I didn't feel like claustrophobic in that moment. Like I did, but I didn't feel the somatic experience of that. I don't know how to describe it. Just very objective about the experience, very aware that it was going on. The other memories that I had pop up for me, and again, this is just very kind of flashbacky stuff. There were very potent moments, sometimes in different color, where I felt like I was looking through a microscope, and on the other end of the microscope was the molecules of my being. And as I was riding the wave, it felt like this ketamine was almost going into the gaps and filling all the holes to like make me whole. And I felt a sense of calm. I was very aware that, and I can't tell you what the holes were. I can't tell you the area of my life that it was patching the holes. I could just see it where it was like matter. When I first would get the image and was aware I was looking through a microscope, it felt like the matter was very dissipated. It was very, it was not homogeneous. It was like the molecules were different sizes and some were not round, and it was just very discombobulated. But as I sat and kept looking through the microscope, things started to become homogeneous. They started to be the same size. They started to operate in unison. Holes were starting to be patched. The matter became a lot more dense to where I couldn't see through it, which was very interesting. And so that was. I just was like, okay, again, trying to stay an observer. I could catch myself being like, ooh, I wonder what this means. I wonder what area of my brain this is correcting, right? And I was like, no, stop, 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 stop. So I wasn't fully always like struggling with myself, but there were times I had to be like, nope, let's get off that train. That's actually one of the patterns that we need to stop, is trying to make sense of what's happening. To contextualize this, I'm a professor. I have a PhD. I did 10 years of school. I have 3 degrees. I made 4.0s in all of those degrees. I do research now. I created a profession in which I can live in my head. And the problem with that is that I often don't have a great balance between mind, body. And so I very, again, those times when I'm trying to be like, what does this mean? And where is this patching the holes? That's my mind trying to take over. I've trained my mind to be dominant. And I was just like, no, let's stay in our body. Let's just allow this to be. So I was just kind of noticing where this image of these molecules and them becoming more dense and doing some patchwork, I was like, where am I feeling this out in my body? So that was what I was really trying to, how I helped to reframe myself to stay in my body. If I noticed myself getting caught on a narrative of what does this mean and where is this patchwork happening, I was like, let's shift. Where am I feeling this at in my body? And let me sit with it. Let me sit with it compassionately, curiously, and not necessarily try to change it, just be with it and digest it in a way by literally feeling it. Another narrative that was something I was not necessarily expecting going into this, but that's what all of this is about, is I became aware of both of the lineages on both sides of my family, so my mom's and my dad's. And both are mutts in their own right. My mom's from the South, raised to a farmer, has ties to being Native American. I actually have a we have been, identified, and I have an Native American card and things like that. And my dad is from upstate New York. He is Catholic Italian. His grandfather, I believe, came, yeah, his grandfather oh, in 1912 came over from Italy to America. And I became very aware of this fight internally of both of my lineages kind of fight, like the Native American and then my dad's side of the family coming over. And this dates back, but just the concept of like my dad's family coming over to America, kind of this like colonialist, you know. I'm sure there's aspects within my mom's lineage that I can dig into, but how, you know, that binary dichotomy of like both having the colonial lineage in me and the Native American lineage and that fighting against itself. And some of those molecules there being very, again, in strife. And I want to go for it further and connect my autoimmune issues. We don't have, kind of have a light diagnosis for rheumatoid arthritis. I decided I want to do some extra testing just to make sure that's what we're looking at. But when you think about the body fighting itself, I became aware in this ketamine session of it. That is one avenue in which my body is fighting itself. It's trying to reconcile the generational trauma of the colonialist and Native American. And I felt that very deeply. Gosh, I feel like I'm gonna start crying. I've also been crying a lot randomly. Like yesterday, I was watching an episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. There was nothing sad about it. And I just randomly started crying. And I was very aware that it was just something my body needed to process. I had no recollection of what it was, no idea. I wasn't even trying to figure it out, but I just let myself do it. So that's kind of coming up for me now as just such a deep, deep, deep grief. Because I'm also aware if I dig into my dad's lineage, they came over from Italy for a reason during that time. And so there's a lot of convoluted stuff going on within myself. I also knew going into this session that, and I let the psychiatrist know, I said, I am obviously here to, I am in singular crisis. I've had my own medical trauma. I've dealt with my brother's medical trauma. I've dealt with my dad's side of the family's medical trauma, him having to donate his bone marrow to his brother for his brother to survive leukemia. I mean, there's a lot. There's a lot. So I'm obviously here for my own like childhood trauma, my medical trauma, but I am also aware that I am showing up representing the generations of my family. And I am very, very aware that my body will be used to help digest what it can. And that's actually what I'm more nervous about. Is I had to set some boundaries with them, with my ancestors, and say, listen, like my body will know what it can and cannot process. I am not, this isn't, they're not allowed to use me, to run me dry, right? But I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't, I mean, I didn't know what I was going to get out of this, but that was a pretty major one. I also bring that up because that was what I downloaded in the session itself. Those were the things that came up for me. Again, I tried not to leave and be like, oh, okay, so I got to make a three-step guide on how I'm going to process my this Native American landscape within me, the genocide that happened. The voices that weren't heard, the voices that are still not heard, the list goes on. It's very, very heavy for me right now. So Kyle comes to pick me up. You have to have somebody take you to and from your appointments. Clearly, there's no way I could have driven. He comes in and he's like, how's it going? And I just was like, I don't, he's like, how was it? And I was like, I don't even, at that point, I had known, I had had conscious awareness of these things I just told you about, but I felt very discombobulated. I couldn't really make sense of anything, but that was really what needed to happen. And I kept telling myself, we don't need to make sense of it now. Some of the thoughts that were coming up is like, I remember getting scared and being like, am I causing more damage? Is doing this and like opening myself up to this is causing more damage and more trauma? And I just was like, Having to remind myself, no, we feel really called to this. This is a part of it. It's going to be heavy. It's going to be intense. So when I got home, Kyle had plans to hang out with some friends that night, which was actually great. I let him know. I was like, I know I'm not going to want to go hang out after this ketamine experience. So it gave me time that night just to myself, just to relax. I felt like I ran a marathon. I was exhausted. Mentally, my brain felt heavy. Which I know after the fact that's going to be good. Like, I'm going to look back and be like, oh, yeah, I had a mentor once in one of my classes be like, while I was getting my PhD, he's like, you know, he walked into class and he's like, who in here's brain has been hurting recently, like studying and stuff? And we all raise our hands. And he said, that's actually a really good sign. It means like you're forming new neural pathways, stuff like that. Like you're exercising your brain. So I went to that and I was like, okay, my brain feels so heavy because it's doing some heavy lifting and this is good. So I get home. And I just rest. I just lay horizontal and I'm just laying with the dogs. Kyle leaves. And about an hour later, I'm like, you know what? Let me approach. I go get my journal. I light my candles. I do some smudging. I get my Palo Santos out. And I'm just like calling in new energy, calling on my ancestors and just thanking them for the session I had that day, letting them know that I'm creating a space right now if there's anything else they need to tell me. Now that we've had a little bit of time, this was maybe 3 hours after the session. So there was a lot more that came, and this was actually where I felt some breakthroughs happen. So I sit down, I settle in, I get my journal, I get my tarot cards, my oracle cards. I also use cannabis very ceremonially, and the fact that Kyle grows it organically is even better. It just feels like I'm bringing the earth into my space. As a disclaimer, my last name, Erdner, loosely translated in German, it's not a direct one-to-one ratio, means earth in German. I have six planets in Capricorn in my astrology chart, with my rising being Taurus. I have a lot of earth in my chart, although I am an Aquarius sun. The earth has been really big for me the last couple of years on grounding, on coming back to just very earthy energies. So I come to that, I'm processing further, and I'm just sitting. I'm like, you know what? I just want my ancestors to know I'm here. I've created space for me to be still. So if there's other downloads that need to come from the ketamine session. And 5 seconds later, after I smoked the cannabis, it almost felt like it brought me back into the ketamine space. And I immediately went to this memory of my first 6 weeks of life. So when I was born with chronic ear infections. And I was extremely tired, baby. My mom would always tell me, like, yeah, I'd have to rush home from work when I get off at 5 and just hope you were still awake. And I remember going back to that first 6 weeks of my life and feeling the heaviness of how exhausted I was, remembering the memories of having those ear infections the first 6 weeks and how painful that was. And connecting the dots between the ketamine session when I was in my womb with my mom, trying to get her attention, saying something's wrong, something's wrong. And then when I came out of the womb and I was just a cry little baby because I had these chronic ear infections, it was my way of saying something's wrong, something's wrong. And this can also be like, obviously, my mom was an attentive mother in the sense of like, takes me to the doctor. I remember her talking about Aunt Sue, my aunt from New York, coming down. She's a nurse. She was helping take care of me. And so it wasn't like I had chronic ear infections and I wasn't tended to, of course. But during that time, I mean, medicine is constantly advancing. And with Nutcracker syndrome, for any of you that are here, I mean, we're on the cutting edge of that. So I don't think they were looking into, oh, chronically ill, ear infections, super tired baby. This is likely we're probably looking at autoimmune stuff here. So they didn't do that. They just treat the symptoms, give medication, probably an antibiotic for ear infections. Who knows what that did to my gut biome? Just kind of further, they did the best they could. So there's not necessarily anger there for like, oh my God, they didn't catch this. Although that does kind of get wrapped into it because the Nutcracker syndrome journey is very much being gaslit, So I was gaslit in the medical system out the gate. So I was very aware of that. And I think I was, this whole experience was helping me relate to my autoimmune disease that I have had for the entirety of my life. And I have battled. And now that I'm going to these doctors and I'm getting educated, I'm like, holy shit. And I'll tell them, I'll be like, can I tell you this instance in middle school where I woke up in the middle of the night and I went to the bathroom and I passed out? I didn't tell anybody, which is trauma in its own right. I was too scared to. My brother was going through a lot of his own medical stuff. And I just knew that my family didn't have the bandwidth. So, I would tell them about that story. I would tell them about something else. And they were like, yeah, that was definitely first signs of autoimmune. That was definitely first signs of POTS going on, things like that. So I just kind of dealt with it my whole life, and so much grief that was coming up for me in experiencing my first 6 weeks. So it wasn't tethered to like, oh, grief because I'm mad at this person, or oh, it was just grief. It was just loss. It was just sadness. It was just like, I can't, nobody will listen to me. I can't actually talk. I'm fucking first 6 weeks of my life. There was also a very vivid image of me in my bassinet, baby bed, crib, whatever you want to call it. My mom used to always tell me these stories that I was never one of those babies that would, like, when I would come awake, that I would cry. So they would almost have to, like, come in my room and just be like, is she awake? Is she not? And the stories were always like, yeah, you were such a happy baby. We'd walk in there and you were just like keeping yourself occupied, singing and making whatever. And so that was the next image I got, was I could literally, I felt like I was in the body of the baby looking through my eyes. Like, it was very intense in a good way. And I was very aware that the reason why I never screamed for my family to come and get me is because that was my time to create and not be interrupted, and to just sing and experience what my vocal cords felt like, and to see the images that were on the ceiling and that were in front of me, and using my hands and connecting the dots. And I didn't want to scream for them or cry for them to come in, because it was always when they would come in that it would just, I had to stop. I wasn't safe per se to like continue creating when they were in the room. Now, what that's about, I don't really know. But it really did. My brain was almost in this whole thing going from who I am right now. Like, it was connecting the dots between like, oh yeah, I do feel really, really, really vulnerable when I present my artwork to the world. A lot of that has changed with just therapy. And I mean, I wouldn't even do this podcast if it wasn't for me doing a lot of work. But I think it was helping me, that whole session was saying, here's the origin of it. Not as a, we got to work through that, but just, I want something about, I mean, EMDR is this way. And I did that for 2 years very extensively. I had a therapist once say, yeah, like EMDR, we're going to take all the clothes, all the like just discombobulated clothes out of the chest of drawers. And we're going to refold them as we go. And we're going to color code them. And we're going to organize them the way that it needs to be organized so that you can connect the dots and make sense of your narrative. And that's really what I was feeling like this ketamine was doing, is it wasn't, I wasn't, there wasn't a victimish mindset in it at all. There wasn't a like, oh, I didn't feel safe around my family and fuck them. It was just like a, I mean, which is a reality, yes, but like it was just more of a like, oh, this mindset wasn't, it didn't start when you were 7 years old or 9 years old. Like, you came into the world with this. Like, there was something there. I keep telling myself, like, hey, we don't necessarily need to get to that root, like, and maybe we will again. This is me doing this episode by episode. So, to be continued. Maybe I'll come back and be like, oh my God, in a past life, this happened. I don't know. That'd be really cool. Maybe I need to like create a container to open myself up to that. I did do a little bit of a side note. Oops. Excuse me. A couple years ago, I felt really called to do medium work, which, when you're born, raised a Christian, you're very much told that's the devil's work, blah, blah. You don't do any witchery stuff. You don't do tarot. You don't do any of that. That's whatever. Anyways, I do all that shit now. I felt really called to do this medium work, and I didn't know. I knew my ancestors were trying to talk to me or past people in my lives. And I did this very, very intense session where I actually found out that in this life, I'm a widow. I had a significant other for all the lives prior. I can never tell this story without not fucking crying. That I had my soulmate. His name's Marcos. At least in how he presented to me in this dream. And I don't even know why we can't be together during this lifetime, but we can't. And so he's actually been one of my pretty significant spirit guides through this. So he was with me during this first ketamine session. He did come up a couple times as a comfort to me, like very much just as a like big hug burly man type of a situation. But mostly it was just this very objective, like, here you're sitting back watching a movie and watching it happen, and I felt as if I was able to not be emotionally involved in the narrative. I was able to just see it for what it was. When I got home, there were a lot more tears. There was a lot more like really, really allowing myself to feel into it. When I was in the ketamine session at the clinic, there were two times that I got this overwhelming sense, kind of a warmth, and I did kind of have these singular solo tears come, but not like the sobbing experience. When I got home, there were some sobbing experiences, very cathartic. And then I, the last couple of days, what I've been doing is Kyle went out that Friday night. He also went out again last night with some friends. I kind of let him know, like, hey, game time decision if I'll do any of this. I ended up not. There was no way I could go out in the world. And he's had some psychedelic experiences. He understood. Like, I am in a very meta space right now. I knew if I went out and went to this concert and all this stuff that they were going to go do, that it would just really could potentially put me in a weird headspace, and I didn't want to do that. So I also didn't go out last night. So I say that to say, especially with the Native American colonialism narrative, one of the things I've been doing, and I just kind of intuitively felt called to do, is at night before I go to bed, I've been listening to Native American flute music, and that has really been opening up a space for me. To process the generational trauma in both lines. I did a lot of cathartic journaling that was really powerful, actually, because, like, in the moment, your thoughts are just one after the next. So it was just so, the first time I had ever journaled in such a, like, stream of thought. And then the next day, I went back and read it and was like, holy shit. Like, it just felt like I was more being used as a container from which the universe was writing through me. Once I finished it and went to bed, I had no conscious thought of what I even wrote. But then to go back and reread it was really powerful. I do remember writing about the concept itself at a macro objective level of yearning. And that was a lot of what brought me back to that first 6 weeks of my life is like, I remember having this thought come into my head of like, why do we yearn? Because everything I've ever yearned for and then I eventually got, it like wasn't that great. You know, it's like you build it up in your head to be something you want it to be, like whether it's relationships, whether it's dessert, sugar, I don't know. It's like this insatiable appetite and you're constantly yearning to like get the next star after your name, the next set of letters. And I was definitely, definitely a part of the achievement. That was my trauma response, is like get all the degrees, be perfect. Play all the sports, just, you know, and that was very much my trauma response. And so I think for me, it's like kind of going off My brain, now that I'm even talking about this, I feel like my brain's kind of also still making connections, so I feel a little lucid right now. But I will say I'm still I kind of forget where my thought was going on that, so we'll just kind of let that rest and be gentle with ourselves. Still very mentally fragile now. I know I will be for this next month. Another th one last thing I'll say, and then we'll conclude this episode, is I think the biggest download I got is the awareness that I don't actually know who I am at the core of myself. And I did bring my journal. Let me bring it out because I do remember, I don't remember writing this, but I went back. So when I was inpatient for my transplant, I had this very psychedelic experience in there, and I was on two forms of Dilaudid. Okay, so that was a fun time. I had this, it was probably like day four, day five, maybe three, I don't know, inpatient. And I woke up in the middle of the night. I don't know if I was, I don't fucking know. Okay, I'm not even gonna try to, I don't know. I was in this inter space of dreaming, call it lucid dreaming, whatever you want. And I saw this like mountain lion, lioness figure walking toward me, and it walked through my body. And once it walked through my body, I was aware that I was standing on the edge of a black hole. So the entire, it was all black. And in the distance were these two monkeys, one of the like kind of scrawny looking ones, and then another like kind of a silverback gorilla. They were real fun, kind of like a, they had a Timon and Pumbaa vibe to them, you know? And the whole time I'm having this experience, inpatient, this psychedelic experience, whatever it is, this vision, if you will, I was very much at peace. I never felt scared. And when I saw the monkeys and they were standing at the edge of this hole, and I remember thinking, like, I was like, I have to walk towards this hole. But I also consciously knew if I walk toward the hole and I go down the hole, it'll be a permanent decision. Whatever that means. Permanent as in literally dying, permanent as in we go down this hole, we never come back to the same person. I don't know. So I walk up to the monkeys, they're there, and I look, I'm about to peer down this black hole, which had some colorful stuff going on down there, but I never like directly saw it. I just knew it wasn't like a black abyss once you went down. And then at that moment, the nurse came in and started taking my vitals and stuff. This was like 2 in the morning. So it knocked me out of that vision. Looking back, I'm like, God damn it. You know, like, could you not have just waited another minute? Because I want to know what was down there. But weirdly, and I remember in that moment being like, it's okay. Like, all this stuff is starting to come together. Like, my 5-MeO experience, March of 2023, which was this black void. I go and have my auto transplant surgery. 3, 4 days later, I have this vision of an experience of this lioness, mountain lion walking through my body. On the other side of that, there's this black hole. These two Timon Pumbaa monkey type things are like, come over here, you know, like we have candy. And I'm like, sure. Just kidding. They weren't that creepy. They were actually very calming. So I go over and I don't see it, but I remember also having the visual thought of like, you're not ready, you're not ready. And now I go to ketamine therapy. I'm like starting to see, like, oh, the 5-MeO experience was a precursor. The lion and the two monkeys, the mountain lion and the two monkeys are the next step in the story, right? Like, time and space don't operate the same way that we look at a 24-hour clock in the 365 days a year. And now I go to ketamine therapy. And one of the last things I had that night when I was journaling and telling my ancestors, like, hey, if you have anything else you want to tell me, the last memory I had, and this is when I actually started sobbing. I do the 6 weeks of when I'm a baby, ear infections, the whole nine yards, when I'm in the crib playing, my mom and dad, or really just my mom comes in. And then the next image I have is me sitting at that edge of that black hole with those two goddamn monkeys. And I'm just like, again, I mean, when you're doing ketamine, it is very lucid. You're just jumping one next thing to another. It doesn't really like make any sense in the moment, but it's also why it's really important that you lean in and do the integration. Like everything I've been talking about up to this point is me trying to integrate what's going on. Not necessarily trying to overanalyze it and try to control what's going on, but me just like intuitively allowing the narrative to come, allowing the patchwork to happen. So the last image, sitting at the edge of that fucking black hole, two monkeys, and I said, I could feel the fear. And this is what I said. Sitting at the black hole, I ask, but what if I fall through? And the monkeys looked at me and said, oh, it's okay. I mean, they said it almost just like this. Oh, it's okay. We'll come with you. And we proceeded to slide into the black hole together. And they morphed into this like energy, rainbow energy, which was really fun, very colorful, going into this quote unquote abyss with me. Now, I don't know that it stopped there. I don't know what was on the other side of that, whatever. But I started sobbing because it never hit me that I had never had a conscious thought that, like, oh, I don't have to go in here alone. Like, they're going to come with me. Like, I almost felt, it's almost like people are always like, well, you got to do it on your own and you'll figure it out yourself. And I think the thing I've really, really struggled with so hard my entire life, and I don't know if this is a past life thing, and I mean, I'll be honest with you, I really do think in past lives I was a part of communal societies. I do not think I don't think any of our bodies really operate really well in individualistic societies. I definitely, definitely understood this, the amount of healing that happened when I moved into a van for 2 years and lived communally, lived with other nomads, and we were doing potluck dinners almost every night. We were looking out for each other. Hey, I'm going to town. Do you need me to take your laundry? Do you need me to drop something off? Do you need me to pick something up for you at the grocery store? The healing in living that way. And if you're a nomad listening to this, because you're like, what the fuck is Simone up to on this ketamine stuff? And you've been following my journey on social media, you know what I'm talking about. And if you've been in those circles with me, I can't thank you enough. Because so much I think of it's really purging again this kind of Native American colonial mentality. You can boil that down into communal versus this capitalistic, individualistic productivity. And my body, I think, is broken down so much immune wise, more and more and more and more the longer I've marinated in this system that does not give a shit about human life at all. Doesn't give a shit about flourishing. It is ableist. It only cares on how much you can produce for it. And so there's a lot of that going on for myself. And I think the healing I'm getting is that I had this massive sense of knowing I'm not alone. I don't currently have a set of mentor. I have mentors in my life, don't get me wrong. And some of them, but I don't have like a anybody that's alive that's like, oh my God, I'm like, this person is really, really a guide for me. I mean, Kyle and I talk about that a lot. We do have people we can call and talk to, but it's not, when you don't have parents that you're like, can really give you the guidance you're looking for. There's a loneliness in that. So I really felt, I think, at the end of this, like, okay, there's a loneliness in this, but I feel very supported through it. I feel my spirit guides coming through. And so, yeah, I'm like excited about what's to come. Maybe ketamine session number two will be me getting to explore what's down that black hole. My hope in understanding. So, one more thing I'll say. This again, this is a bit of a digital diary. So, I'm just, my cells are just doing what they're doing right now. That black hole really intuitively felt like it was what my core self was supposed to be, but I've never actually known what that was because my entire life was trying to conform to a society that is broken. And when you're trying to do that and you're trying to make waves and you're trying to survive in a broken society that makes no sense, you don't have time to figure out who you are. Because your entire identity is a response to what society wants you to be. So I'm having an identity crisis, and I'm doing it in front of you all. I hope you enjoy. You know, I'm just like, hey, let's record a series of me having an absolute come apart and you being along for this journey. Maybe you'll feel a little less crazy yourself. I don't know. But that's where I'm at. I don't know. I have no idea what the next sessions are going to hold. Don't we wish we could understand what the next sessions are going to hold? But that's the whole purpose, is just being in the present moment, letting this be what it's going to be. I hope, to some extent, I don't even know why I'm sharing as much as I'm sharing with you, but I also think that's the medicine of it, though. I know that's the medicine of it. Whew. Again, emotions come in waves. But moving forward, a couple of things I do want to talk about is in my next session, some things that, like I mentioned, I'm going to bring my headphones and my eye masks next time. They also have, I'm really excited about this actually. I don't even know what the name of this bed is, but I was sitting in a recliner, but they also have this bed that is hooked to Bluetooth, and you, whatever music you play, the bed vibrates to the music, and it helps. It's a somatic experience. And so they told me that, she said, hey, next time you're more than welcome to try this for free. And then after that, it's an extra $25 to do this. And I immediately was like, I know this is what I need. Because I need my goal this year. And I was aware of this at the end of last year, going into this year. My resolution, whatever the fuck you want to call it, is very much balance between mind and body. Really transitioning myself out of this cognitive central nervous system space and getting into my body, trusting the wisdom of my body, all of that. And I, looking at my nutcracker journey as well, I do think to some extent, as traumatic as this medical journey has been, I do believe it was also a way, because of my coping skills, that I started to be like, I need to come, I was forced to have to tend to my body. I was forced to have to advocate for my body. And so inadvertently, Nutcracker syndrome was bringing me back to my body. And so the gratitude I have for these vascular compressions, the gratitude that these vascular compressions have given me, I tell Kyle all the time, I don't know of anybody else in my life who understands and has an intimate understanding of what blood flow feels like in your body. Because for most people who don't have vascular compressions, you just experience blood. You don't have a baseline of knowing what it feels like when it's fucking up. So you don't even, like right now, if you even try to tap into what blood feels like in your body, you know, I mean, I think to some extent you could get there, but us with vascular compressions, we know what it feels like for blood to corrode our body, for blood to make our bodies a toxic environment, for blood to make us feel heavy, for blood to feel sludgy, for blood to feel painful, for blood to cause an absolute systemic ruckus of musculoskeletal, cardiovascular, neurological, I mean, all of it, because blood is a life force. I intimately know what it feels like to slowly die while alive. And not just like, oh yeah, we're dying every day. No, like legitimately for your blood to be corroding your body. And then to go have that fixed, to get my Mathener stent, to get my Nutcracker syndrome auto transplant, kidney auto transplant, and to see the massive shift in, oh my God, this is what blood feels like. That is such a gift. It really, really is. And oh gosh, just being so grateful for blood, for what we have, understanding the nuances of it, understanding how vulnerable it is as well. And so I think that's something that has brought me, vascular compressions have brought me back into my body, and them offering this bed and saying, hey, here's something that can help bring you further into your body. I'm excited about that moving forward. Something else too is music. So this last time, when we went in, they had music playing It was, just so y'all know, it's called Liquid Mind on Spotify is the playlist. That's what they play. So I went with that. It was good. I liked it. Again, clearly I had a great experience with everything I just told you. My body felt safe to be able to d make these downloads. As I mentioned, one of the things I've been doing the last couple of days is listening to Native American flute music. That has been very beautiful for me. I'm going to be bringing that in, I believe, in the next couple. So the last couple of days I've been listening to the Native American flute. I also downloaded a couple chakra meditations on Insight Timer, which is a meditation app that I like to use. I've been just playing around with some psychedelic playlist to see, like, they all give you a different energy, right? Like the Native American flute is going to bring one thing, more of the like lo-fi beats going to bring a different thing. So I'm going to play around with that, be more intentional on the music I bring into the space, bring the eye mask, bring the headphones. I'm continuing, like today I had yoga, really feeling into the body on like the little nooks and crannies that were kind of more tight than usual. I've been doing a lot of stretching at home, really trying to prioritize sleep. The last 36, 48 hours, I have been exhausted. I'm even exhausted now. I can't explain this level of exhaustion. I've never felt it before. I'm going to go ahead and just say this level of exhaustion is because my body's rewriting itself, so we're being gentle. Another thing too is trying to just be really conscious about food. I do have a very emotional relationship with food. I have, gosh, to say dabbled in eating disorders, it kind of feels weird, but it does feel that way. Like, I was definitely dealing with some bulimia back in the day. I remember I had six sessions of like eating a lot and then going and throwing up. And I remember on that sixth one being like, we can either keep doing this, like, this is a defining moment. And so I stopped doing that. I actually got out of triathlons at that point because it was just not a healthy space for my body to exist. But when I bring this up to say, I come from a family that really struggles with food. Food is their addiction. Food, sugar is their addiction, just like alcohol is to the alcoholic, etc. So I'm also dealing with that as well. One of the things, like the night before, I just was like, usually, I remember sitting there being like, no, don't go eat comfort food. Like, that's it. And I was just like, no, I'm not. I need to be gentle. So I went and had my comfort food, which I hate to say is a McDouble value deal at McDonald's with a large Sprite. And if I really need it, which I did on Thursday night, it was an Oreo McFlurry. So I was like, I text Kyle, I was like, can you bring this home? So he did. And then when I got done with the session, so again, I was very, while I'm not 100% Italian, I was very much raised by the Italian culture. I was raised by my dad's cooking. I was raised by pasta sauce and spaghetti, okay? So meatballs, the whole nine yards. There is in Denver this amazing, I have not, God, it's like the sandwiches bring me right back to New York. So I told Kyle, I was like, can we please go by Carmine's? So pick up a 12, we both get sandwiches. I got a tiramisu. I was just like needed that comfort of the Italian space, and I used food to do that. And that's also another thing too, is I'm trying to, like, I could feel this kind of minion coming in and being like the, you know, internal family systems therapy, this minion coming in and being like, oh, you shouldn't eat that. You should be just eating vegetables and your body's really vulnerable. But I was like, that's also a pattern that we need to stop. Gently saying that because food has way more roles in our world than just fuel. I mean, it is emotional. It is. I've been watching a lot of, like, I'm watching Omnivore on Apple TV. Kyle and I just got t done watching Knife's Edge, which is a Michelin star, documentary. And those, what's funny is I've been watching it the last couple of days too, and those, I've been crying a lot during those episodes as well. And it's because it's like there's some concepts of food coming up for me and really trying to recreate my relationship around it. However, I say that to say, I'm trying not to be a should to, have to, ought to in the space of food. I am trying to gain weight because I lost so much going into my transplant. And at the same time, really trying to balance a well-rounded meals, getting the vegetables, being more conscious about giving my body what it needs as well, while also balancing that with like emotional eating and realizing there's a time and space. And every time I talk about this, like my friend Tracy comes up. Shout out to Tracy. She's a registered dietitian along with a couple other my friends. And it's always just like there is no bad food, you know? And that's also something coming up for me. So thank you for listening to me, Gab. On and on. I had no idea what was going to come from this recording, but I appreciate you being on this journey with me. I hope, again, my hope and plan is after my next session, which is on Wednesday. So, first session was on a Friday. My second session will be this following upcoming Wednesday. So, 5 days in between. And I'm a little nervous because it's in the middle of the week. So, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't. The way this last session went, I'm like, I don't want to have to take 2 days off work. And my birthday weekend's coming up this next weekend. My birthday's on January 25th. I got an Airbnb out in Idaho Springs. I'm inviting some of my friends. I'm just really, really curating a beautiful space for me and for my friends that I'm really excited about. I was already curating this space prior to the ketamine therapy, and now I'm just like so excited to be around my friends. But I'm a little nervous because I'm like, oh my God, like if this next Wednesday trip takes out 48 hours, then I gotta go hang out with my friends. But we're gonna be gentle. I want to just thank my friends. I've really curated a good friend group that if that does happen and I show up and I'm like, I just can't be, like y'all go do your shit. I'm just gonna stay at the Airbnb. That's fine. I mean, my friends are so supportive. They'll be completely understanding and we're gonna have fun no matter what. So thank you for being along with this. I hope to continue getting these done episode by episode, but if not, I will upload them as they come along. And I think it'll be beautiful to look back for myself on these and see how it all started and how it ends. And I might even do a couple other episodes, maybe at a 3 month and a 6 month and whatever, based on just how I feel, to give you all some updates so that you can see the longer term effects. But I will end by saying this. I am optimistic. I do believe I will be a part of the 80%. I do believe I intuitively feel like I will be able to come off all my antidepressants, which is Wellbutrin 150 XL and Lexapro 10 milligrams. And we'll see about my PTSD meds, which are mostly sleep medications, for nightmares. So yeah, thank you for being here with me. I just want you to know I'm recording these as a massive hug to you, as a massive hug to all of us. And I hope you feel supported on this podcast. I hope when you chime in that you feel like you have somebody sitting next to you in the passenger seat, just slowly in a virtual space, kind of nudging along this kind of crazy journey together. And as we end, maybe as you transition into the next episode or into whatever you have going on in your current space, just want to invite you to take a huge deep breath through your nose, fully filling your lungs, maybe holding it for a second at the top. And then slowly, either through your mouth or your nose, exhaling. And then one more full deep inhale. And a slower exhale, maybe sighing it out. You're welcome to stay with that cyclical breathing pattern as long as you would like, maybe even attaching some gratitude for self, for others, for your medical team, for your support system, for the universe, for your spirit guides, whoever it might be. And just know that I am proud of you for being here. I'm proud of all of us for what we've done. And I look forward to being on this journey with you.